Good morning, and welcome to the second installment in the NIMBY and the D-Hoppers podcast. Cool stuff this week. Well, I got the Hebrew translation of NIMBY and the D-Hoppers. That's another Creative Commons release that was published in an Israeli science fiction magazine, and that's linked over on craphound.com. I had a great day at an activist event in Amsterdam, the peer-to-peer television event. It was very fun on Friday. But that's pretty much why I didn't get any more installments out this week. It's just been a bit of a madhouse. I had to be up at 4 a.m. on Friday. And add to that the jet lag from the trip to L.A. and speaking at the Girl Geek dinner on Tuesday and all the rest of it. And I just couldn't possibly have gotten one out. I'm really sorry. Some great news coming up in the next couple of weeks. I can't talk about it yet. It's all embargoed, but there's some really cool and big changes ahead for me in the next year or so, and I can't wait to announce them, but it's going to have to be a week or so. Anyway, hope you enjoy this installment 2 of NIMBY and the D-Hoppers, the podcast. Installment 3, the final part, will come up very shortly. Thanks. Bye. Roman escaped as we were finishing breakfast. It was my fault. I figured once he'd taken us through the D-Hopper's workings, he was cowed. Sally and I had a mini-spat over it that left me feeling all nostalgic and fuzzy for our romantic past, and maybe that's why I wasn't on my guard. It also felt less antisocial once my houseguest was untied and spooning up muesli at my homey old kitchen table. But he was more cunning than I'd guessed. Square-jawed, blue-eyed, well, black and blue-eyed, thanks to Sally, and exhausted, he'd lulled me into a false sense of security. When I turned to squeeze another cup of coffee from the kitchen wall, he kicked the table over and scrambled away. Sally fired a bolt after him, which hit my already overwrought house and caused my toilet to flush and all my tchotchkes to rain down from the shelves as it jerked. In an instant, he was scurrying away down the street. "Sally," I shouted, exasperated, "you could have killed him." She was ashen, staring at the pistol. "I didn't mean to. It was a reflex." We both struggled into our shoes and took off after him. By the time I caught sight of him, he was off in the bicycle fields, uprooting a ripe mountain bike and pedaling away towards Guelph. A group of rubberneckers congregated around us, most of the town, dressed in woolens and mitts against the frosty air. Sally and I were still in our pajamas, and I saw the town gossips taking mental notes. By supper, the house net would be burning up with news of our reconciliation. "Who is that?" Lemuel asked me. He'd been mayor before me, and still liked to take a proprietary interest in the comings and goings around town. "D-Hopper," Sally said. "Technocrat. Killed my house." Lemuel clucked his tongue and scrunched up his round, ruddy face. "That's too bad. The Becker's house, too. Barry, you better send someone off to Toronto to parley for some more seed." "Thank you, Lemuel," I said, straining to keep the irritation out of my voice. "I'll do that." He held his hands up. "I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job," he said. "Just trying to help out. Times like this, we all need to pull together." "I just want to catch that son of a bitch," Sally said. "Oh, I expect he'll be off to his home dimension shortly," Lemuel said. "Nuh-uh," I said. "We got oomph." Sally trod on my foot. "Yeah, I expect so," she said. "How about the other one? Did anyone see where he went?" "Oh, he took off east," Hezekiah said. He was Lemuel's son, and you could have nested them like Russian dolls. Ruddy, paunchy, round-faced and earnest. Hezekiah had a fine touch with the cigarette trees, and his grove was a local tourist stop. "Headed for Toronto, maybe." "All right, then," Sally said. "I'll send word ahead. He won't get far. We'll head out and meet him." "What about your house?" Lemuel said. "What about it?" "Well, you got to get your stuff moved out soon. The house husbands will be wanting to take it away for mulch." "Tell them they can put my stuff in Barry's place," she said. I watched the gossipy looks flying. Sally worked the house net furiously as the house husbands trekked in and out of my place with armloads of her stuff. They kept giving me "hey, big fella" looks, but I knew that any congratulations were premature. Sally wasn't moving in to get romantic. She was doing it out of expedience, her primary motivation in nearly every circumstance. She scribbled with the housenet stylus, back rigid, waiting impatiently for her distant correspondents to work their own styli, until every wall in my house was covered in temporary pigment. No one had seen Osborne. "Maybe he went back to his dimension," I said.
No, he's here. I saw his D-hopper before he ran out last night. It was a wreck. Maybe he fixed it, I said. And maybe he hasn't. This has got to stop, Barry. If you don't want to help, just say so. But stop trying to dissuade me. She slammed the stylus down. Are you in or out? I'm in, I said. I'm in. Then get dressed, she said. I was already dressed. I said so. Put on Roman's armor. We need to be on an even footing with Osborne if we're going to catch him, and that stuff won't fit me. What about Roman? He'll be back, she said. We have his D-hopper. What did I call it? Outlandish technocrat armor? Maybe from the outside. But once I was inside, man, I was a god. I walked on 7-league boots, boots that would let me jump as high as the treetops. My vision extended down into the infrared and up into the ultraviolet and further up into the electromagnetic so that I could see the chemically encoded house net signals traversing the root systems that all the houses tied into, the fingers of polarized light lengthening as the sun dipped into the west. My hearing was acute as a rabbit's, the wind soughing and the crackle of the forest creatures and the whoosh-whoosh of sap, all clearly delineated and perfectly triangulated. We set out after Roman, and I quickly evolved a search strategy. I would leap as high as I could, then spin around quickly as I fell back to Earth, surveying the countryside in infrared for anything human-shaped. Once back on terra firma, I scooped Sally up and took a great leap forward, no waiting for her slow, unassisted legs to keep up with my gigantic strides, set her down, and repeated the process. We kept after it for an hour or two, falling into a kind of pleasant reverie, lulled by the fiery, crazy quilt of the autumn leaves as seen from a great height. I'd seen color plates in the old technocrat books, the Earth seen from great heights, from space, and all of the things we'd given up with the technocracy. I think that flight was the thing I wished for most fervently. It was growing chilly by the time we reached Hamilton. Hamilton! In 2 hours! I was used to thinking of Hamilton as being a hard day's bike ride from home, but here I was, not even out of breath, and there already. I gathered Sally into my arms and leapt towards the city limits, enchanted by the sunset's torchy light over the hills. Then something fast and hard smashed into me from the side. Instinctively, I tightened my grip on Sally, but she wasn't there. Good thing, too, since with the armor's power assist, squeezing Sally that hard might have broken her spine. I slammed into the dirt, the armor's suspension whining. I righted myself and heard Sally hollering. I looked up and there she was, squirming in Osborne's arms as he leapt away with her. They headed west, back towards the shtetl, and I chased as best as I could, but Osborne worked the armor like he'd been born into it. How must his dimension be, where people leap through the air on tireless, infinitely strong legs, enhanced vision and reflexes making light work of the banal realities of geography, space, and time. I lost them by Flamborough. Panic scratched at my guts as I sought them through the entire electromagnetic spectrum, as I strained my ears to make out Sally's outraged bellows. A moment's reflection told me I was panicking needlessly. There was only one place they'd be going, to the shtetl, to my house, to the D-hopper. Except that I had the D-hopper with me, neatly clipped to the armor's left thigh guard, in a small cargo space. The right thigh guard was full of miniature telescoping survival bits of various description and a collection of pills that Roman had identified as nutritional supplements. Osborne wouldn't be getting out of my dimension any time soon. I set off for home as fast as I could in the now near-total darkness. A bloody harvest moon rose behind me as I made my leaping dash, and I got lost twice in the odd shadows it cast from my unfamiliar aerial vantage points. Still, it took less than an hour traveling alone, not bothering to search anymore. My house's own biosystems cast a welter of infrared shadows, making it impossible for me to tell if Sally and Osborne were inside, so I scrambled up the insulating ivy on the north side and spidered along the walls, peering in the windows. I found them in the Florida room at the back of the house. Osborne had his helmet off. He had a surprisingly boyish, good-natured face that took me off my guard for a moment, and he was eating a slice of pumpkin pie from my fridge, his sidearm trained on Sally, who was glaring at him from her seat in the rickety twig chair she'd given me for my birthday half a decade before. The Bioloom porch lamp glowed brightly inside the Florida room, and I knew that it would be throwing up glare on the inside of the windows. Emboldened, I crouched down and duck-walked the length of the windowsill, getting the lay of the land before deciding on my next course of action. Osborne's helmet was propped atop the fridge, staring blindly at me. The pistol was in his left hand, the pie in his right, and his finger was on the trigger. I couldn't think of any way to disarm him before he fired on Sally. I would have to parley. It's my strong suit, anyway. That's why they made me mayor. I could bargain with those arrogant pricks in Toronto for house seeds, with the folks of Hamilton for cold-temp citrus fruit, with the traveling circuses that demanded bicycle after bicycle in exchange for the night's entertainment. In Lemuel's day, the shtetl hardly had a bike to its name by March, the whole harvest traded away for our necessities. After my first year as mayor, we'd had to grow an extra barn with hooks all along the rafters to hang our spare bicycles from. I would parley with Osborne for Sally, extract a promise to steer clear of our dimension forever in exchange for his damned technocrat gadget. I raised a gauntleted hand to tap on the window when I was tackled from behind. I had the presence of mind to stifle my grunt of surprise as the armor's gyros whined to keep me erect under the weight of the stranger on my back. I reached behind me and grabbed my assailant by the shoulder, flipping him over my head and to the earth. He, too, stifled his groan, and as I peered at him in the false light of my visor's display, I saw that it was Roman. "You can't give him the trans-D device," he hissed. His hand was massaging his shoulder. I felt a pang of guilt. That must have really hurt. I hadn't so much as slapped someone in 10 years. Who had? "Why not?" I asked. "I have to bring him to justice. He's the only one with the key to his malware agents. If he gets away now, we'll never catch him. The whole world will be at his mercy." "He's got Sally," I said. "If I need to give him the D-hopper to get her back, that's what I'm going to do." Thinking, what the hell do I care about your world, pal? He grimaced and flushed. He'd stolen a woolly coat and a pair of unripened gumboots from somewhere, but he was still wearing nothing but his high-tech underwear underneath, and his lips were cyanotic blue. I was nice and toasty in the heated armor. Muffled voices came from my Florida room. I risked a peek. Sally was haranguing Osborne fiercely, though nothing but her baleful tone was discernible through the pain. Osborne was grinning. I could have told him that wasn't much of a strategy. He seemed to be chuckling, and I watched in horrified fascination as Sally stood abruptly, unmindful of the gun, and heaved her chair at his head. He raised his forearms to defend himself, and his gun wasn't pointing at Sally anymore. No thinking at all, just action, and I jumped through the window, a technocrat action hero snap rolling into his shins, grappling with his gun hand, and my enhanced hearing brought me Sally's shouts, Osborne's grunts of surprise, Roman's bellowing passage through the sharp splinters of the window. I kept trying for Osborne's unprotected head, but he was fast as a world where time is sliced into fractions of a second, fast as a person raised in that world, and I, who never measured time in a unit smaller than a morning, was hardly a match for him. He fired the pistol wildly, setting my house to screaming. Before I knew it, Osborne had me pinned on my stomach, my arms trapped beneath me. He leveled the pistol at Sally again. "What a waste," he sighed, and took aim. I wriggled fiercely, trying to free my arms, and the D-hopper dropped into my gauntlet. Without thinking, I jammed as many controls as I could find, and the universe stood on its head.